Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Rietal. In this episode, we have a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting.
This is a roundtable discussion to talk about the one, the only, the Comic-Con International. This time, of course, as always, in San Diego. It's the 2011 Comic-Con. This is the be-all, end-all of comic book conventions, and any other convention calling itself Comic-Con is just woefully deluded. This thing, I actually did the math one year and figured out the exhibit hall floor covers about the square footage of 10 football fields. So, big thing. They had just hundreds of panels. Joining us tonight, obviously, I've got Bob. Say hello, Bob.
Hello.
Okay, we've got Sean. Say hello, Sean.
Hi, hello.
And we've got Gabe. How are you, Gabe?
Doing good. Hello.
And Ralph. He's on the phone, so you may need to speak up just a little bit, Ralph.
Hello.
Cool. Now, I've been going to Comic-Con for many, many years, like 25 or 30, missing only one, which was either, I think, 92 or 93, maybe. Bob, how long have you been going?
This was my 21st consecutive year.
How about you, Sean?
This is my fourth year in a row, and I hadn't gone before that.
All right. Gabe?
This was my ninth year in a row going.
How about you, Ralph?
Every year since 1989.
Cool. Now, I actually went to one ages ago, and I couldn't have been more than like maybe 10 or something at the time. It was at the basement of, what was that hotel? The Westgate Hotel, maybe? And it was just tiny then. So I think, you know, all you guys have been going for a good couple of years and stuff. So you've gotten comfortable with the size of this convention, haven't you guys? I mean, what do you think, Bob?
I mean, it's grown relatively steadily, but it's not like getting thrown in the deep end all at once. Since, I mean, the first year I went was, I think, the last year it was at that hotel downtown. You know, so it, and then, you know, when it came to the convention center, it was only like hall like ABC or ABC and D or something. And then it, you know, expanded and expanded and expanded. It used to be more comics. People give it the, you know, they talk about the Hollywood component of it, and that'll be something that'd be interesting to talk to people about also is, you know, what is your, you know, main things that you go to con for. But, you know, people say, oh, there's so much Hollywood. And that's true, but I think that even the Hollywood stuff aside, there is so much comic book content, because I go pretty much exclusively for comics content. And the panels, the number of panels, the amount of vendor booths, the amount of, you know, just publishers and all that kind of stuff that's there for comics is unequaled in any other con that I've been to. I mean, I haven't been to the New York con, for instance, but it has a lot of comic book content.
So, Sean, what do you think about how the con's kind of grown over the years?
Well, it's kind of interesting because my first year was 2008, and it was already essentially the gigantic monstrosity of a convention that it is now back then. I, from what I understand, it was kind of the maybe like between 10 and 5 years ago that it really started to grow beyond just being a comic show into kind of the bigger comic, Hollywood, pop culture, video game, and every other thing you can shake a stick at convention that it is now. So I'm pretty used to it because first time I showed up, it was huge. And so that kind of set the tone for me. And I was always used to going to WonderCon, which is the show up in San Francisco. And it's put on by the same people. And while it doesn't have the same size and the same just kind of epic feel of a convention that Comic-Con does, it still is a big enough show that it wasn't a huge shock to me how big it was. So I don't know. I guess I'm the newbie of the crowd. Everyone here has been going for like, 10, 20, 30 years.
So you did get dumped in the deep end a couple of years back when you first came then.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely did. But yeah, I'm comfortable around crowds, and I'm comfortable with huge events like that. So it wasn't too off-putting or anything for me. And it's actually one of the things that I love about the show is just the size of it, because just that aspect of it is something you can't get at any other show. And it adds just a certain amount of energy to the entire convention, having it just be so big and having so many people there for it.
So, now, Gabe, you also have been going not quite as long as like 20-plus years. When you went to the first one, how did that feel to you?
Oh, when I first went 9 years ago, it was it's completely different than it was now. I had to stand in line to buy my tickets to get in, which is completely unheard of to do something like that today. It was just one of those things where this was before all the big comic book movies came out. So it was, still a good rounded comic book show. But it was also something that, seeing what it is today and seeing it grow from just being a little comic book show, it's really something kind of interesting, because it used to just be nobody knew what I was talking about. I mean, I told them, hey, I need to take this week off of work so I can go to Comic-Con. Nowadays, it's like, oh, hey, Gabe, you going to Comic-Con again? I saw it on the news, and it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. So really seeing it just grow on top of itself has really been an experience in itself, actually.
It's a kind of an interesting point, because I remember many years ago, you'd say Comic-Con, and people would, sometimes, wonder if it was like some comedy, with like, stand-up comics or something. But now it's kind of infiltrated the culture to the point where if you say Comic-Con, most people have an understanding of what it's about. I mean, heck, there's entire issues of Entertainment Weekly, that have Comic-Con on the cover of it. And, they talk about it on the news and, lots of different places.
Well, when I got back to work, not only did everyone know what it was for the most part, but a lot of people had been following a lot of the online coverage and wishing they had been able to go. So I think it's certainly grown. Now, Ralph, how about you? How do you think the con has grown over the years?
Well, the first 2 years that I did Comic-Con, it was at the concourse, which was kind of in the middle of downtown, if not off to the side a little bit. And then it's been for the last 20 years at the San Diego Convention Center, and it was half the size it was, if even that, up until about 2000, I think it was. So it was definitely a lot smaller, and it did have its brief growing pains in the mid-90s, I think about 93 or 94, I noticed there was a time where there were lines, but it was a lot smaller than what we have now. But the lines were some of it for Hollywood. There's always been that Hollywood component. But it was a lot of lines for a lot of the Image guys that were real popular. And this is back in the speculation market that was big right before the bubble burst. So there were a lot of lines for people having to get tickets just to go in and see McFarlane or some of these guys, or getting in lines just to get Rob Liefeld autograph his Captain America number one. So there was a little bit of that, but certainly it really exploded about 8, 9 years ago or so. In the last 10 years, it's certainly, if you look at the numbers that have attended there, it really has shot up, and a lot of it's really the Hollywood panels that are really generating those numbers, I think.
Well,
and it has gone mainstream.
Yeah, you bring up some good points, though, with the Image stuff, because I remember back when Image was first starting, those guys were like rock stars. They nearly started a riot once when they were throwing out the gold copies of their comics and stuff to the crowd in front of their booth or whatever. It was wild.
It was.
And I do think one of the things that's really facilitated the convention growing the way it has is, moving to the bigger venue, because you're right, back when it was in the concourse and the Civic Center and stuff, they would go out to the theater section occasionally for they had Bob Kane talking about the Batman movie back when that was coming out, and they would do some slideshows with some of the Star Trek guys or whatever. But it was, a little Hollywood, not much. But then once they got to the convention center, and it was just halls A, B, and C at that point, once they added that hall D, that really, I think, was when we started to see the Hollywood influx onto the exhibit hall floor. Because that first year, Hall D was the first part of the extension, D as in dog.
When they first started, I don't think they were using that hall.
No, they weren't.
Well, that hall didn't exist originally.
Yeah. The first year they used it, it might have been the first year, I remember they had a big the big vehicle from that Mystery Men movie.
Well, they had the Time Machine there in a big, huge, open area in empty booth.
Right. I remember that, and I also remember one year when they had that big vehicle from, like, the Mystery Men. You know that movie with Ben Stiller based on the Bob Burden comic, the guys from Flaming Carrot?
But I think
that was about 1999, I think.
Is that late?
Yeah. Well,
I think The Time Machine, though, was the first time we had seen a Hollywood movie set foot on the exhibit hall floor and really use a you know, fairly ostentatious, you know, amount of space, you know, that was just more than they needed to show some props and stuff like that. It felt overly spacious compared to, again, at this point, Marvel and DC's booths were, you know, three booth wide, you know, things versus the mega booths they've got now. So I would say around that time was kind of a turning point on the exhibit hall floor, even though some of the panels and stuff like that, Hollywood had been, I don't want to say entrenched, but in presence over the years.
Well, they had the Mystery Men was about 99, but I remember the Time Machine thing, and that was about 2001.
Yeah, I just looked them up on IMDb. Mystery Men was 99, and the Time Machine was 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in 2002, but they were advertising it the year before. I actually just watched The Time Machine last night, of all things, but I remember they were advertising it, and that was about the time I think things really exploded, because I remember when they first opened up Ballroom 20, before we had Hall H, it was Ballroom 20 was the big room, and I remember 2001, 2002 getting in there. And I was lucky enough to get in the front row, and they had a whole parade of Hollywood stars up there. And with me with my camera, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. I got all these great pictures of James Cameron and Schwarzenegger, and all these stars are just lining up. And I thought, this is fantastic. I got to do this every year. And then I quickly found out by the next year that everyone else got the bright idea. And that's when I really started noticing the lines were just getting large, and people were waiting at 5 a.m. to get into this thing, and that's where I really noticed the things started to really explode with the lines and the increase with the crowds, and that was all about 2002, I think it was.
Well, back around 2000-2001, I had the brilliant idea. I had a digital camera. I would take photos of all the booths in the exhibit hall. And again, this was back when it was, I think, just Hall A, B, and C. They might have had D at that point, but it was low enough crowds that you could actually step back from a booth across the aisle and still see the booth and get those kind of photos. So I took photos of literally thousands of booths. And that's just something you can't do these days, because not only is the exhibit hall twice the size, but it's so crowded. There's so many people there. There's so much going on that it's a very different experience. Now, it's a lot of fun, and I make a point every year of kind of walking the aisles, you know, each and every one, just to try to go to every booth. And it's, I mean, I'm getting older as time goes on, is certainly a factor, but man, it's tiring.
You know, this is the first year that I did not even attempt to walk all the different aisles. I mean, I had written down certain things that I wanted to go see and certain people that I wanted to visit, and I actually missed a couple of those, but I would kind of go to those places and I would look when I was going between the different places, but I never actually tried to walk up and down all the aisles. So I probably missed like at least 50% of the stuff that was there this year.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I had a similar experience as well, because a friend of mine called me on Sunday and asked a favor for me to go check if something was available at some booth, and he looked up the booth number and he sent me a text message with where it was, and I walked over to it, and I think it was like the Nickelodeon booth, and he was hoping I could get something as that he wanted to give as a gift to his daughter. But I realized when I got there that I had not seen that part of the show the entire weekend yet. And so even on Sunday morning, I found that there were places that I just hadn't seen yet. And I think I ended up in the same situation on Saturday evening later on when the show was about over. I was walking around and just found myself somewhere I hadn't been yet. And that kind of surprised me, because in past years, I think I had made an effort to at least see everything quickly throughout the entire convention floor.
For me, the part of the hall that had that kind of a thing that it took me till later into the weekend to get to was kind of in that hall D and E area, where you had some of those bigger booths that were just heavily impacted. You had the Star Wars area, the Mattel, the Lego, the toys, those things. And it wasn't until, I think, Saturday afternoon that I finally stumbled across the booth on that back aisle that had the TARDIS in there. And it's just such a big convention. It's easy to think you've covered a lot of the ground and realize you just didn't go down this one hallway and see this really cool stuff.
Yeah, I still try on preview night and the first day, Thursday. That's where I make an effort to try and do the up and down aisle to try and see all the booths. Because if I don't do it preview night and Thursday, once Friday, Saturday rolls around, forget about it. Because then I'm just rubbing against people the whole time, going against the flow of traffic at that point.
I tell you what, I felt a lot better physically this year coming away from this con because I didn't try to do that. Like I said, like John said, I'm getting a little older. It's like by not doing that and by kind of going out of my way to attend more panels, I think, you know, it's like I would go up and I'd sit through a panel or two and then I'd maybe go down and I'd walk around for an hour, hour and a half, and then I'd go see some other panels. It really kept me feeling a lot better throughout the show that, you know, I wasn't 6 or 8 hours in a row just slogging up and down all those aisles.
Here's like something I noticed. I don't know if anybody else did this year, but that the entire floor was carpeted. Was that new?
I did notice that. That is new, and it was very much appreciated because typically in the past, a lot of the aisleways and stuff would just be bare cement, and that would just be really hard on the feet.
Now, yeah, I remember I would be walking around, and I would try to find, after, you know, 4 or 5 hours, try and find that one booth. It was always like Viz or DC, and it had a carpeted booth.
Well, they have
give my feet a rest there.
Multiple levels of padding beneath it, and you always want to find the one booth that really sprung for the heavy-duty, inch-thick padding or whatever, that it was just walking on clouds or whatever. What I always do every year for con is, about a month before, I buy new shoes, and I also buy new socks. And this year I sprung for some slightly more expensive socks that had the extra padding and all that. And it may not seem like it would make that big of a deal, but I was surprised. Between doing that and pacing myself a bit better this year and just going back to the hotel and getting off my feet for a while every day, I came out of there actually able to walk, whereas some years I'm getting in the... You know, I drive back from San Diego to Austin, Texas, and just on the drive back it's... I feel like I'm partially crippled or something because my legs are so tired, my feet are so sore. This year I actually did fairly well in that regard. Now, Ralph,
you're not just walking on the con floor for, you know, 5-6 hours, but even afterwards you're walking to a restaurant to meet friends, to eat, walking back to your hotel or what have you, and you know, that's definitely something that adds on to the concrete of everything.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Ralph, how about you? Did you try to walk the whole floor?
No, I haven't done that in years, and talking about areas of the con that you haven't seen in a while, and it's kind of like a different experience. For me, that was the very end of Hall H. I don't think I've been on that end of the con at the very end for years. I'd always go near it, maybe down where the toys are, but this time I saw the guys that had the posters on the wall at the very end, and then they had the other booth that's just that whole, it looks like a little mini building of T-shirts. They build that whole wall going around. I hadn't seen that
you mean Hall A, right?
Yeah, Hall A.
Okay, I thought you said H. Sorry, okay.
No. I'm usually at the other end of the con. I'll go a little bit to Hall H, or not Hall H, but the other G, end of the call, con. Would that be B, I guess, or what is it at this point?
G. I don't
know, but yeah, G, the one that has Artist Alley and has a lot of the big booths, and I would venture over to the middle, and it definitely is a different con on the other side of the room there, where it is a little quieter, and you have more of the comic-centric booths, and... But if you go farther down, you get some of the toys, and then you kind of get a mishmash of things with posters and T-shirts. And that's the area that I haven't really ventured towards in a while.
You know what I found that was kind of interesting was walking through that media part of the hall, you know, where, I don't know, like Sci-Fi, Warner Brothers, the Star Wars booth, Hasbro, you know, all that kind of stuff. It reminded me, I went to Mardi Gras one year. You know, on the Saturday before Fat Tuesday, and you know, Bourbon Street is like wall to wall people, and you're just like in this mass of humanity, and you kind of like, if you want to move one direction up the street, you kind of just try to insert yourself into a flow of people moving in that direction, you know, and if you want to move the other way, you kind of try to work your way over and kind of get swept up in a flow of people going the other way. And that side of the con is almost like that. I mean, the halls are so crowded, especially some of those major aisles that go the length of the convention center.
Yeah.
You know, like the ones that have the numbers hung over them. That's kind of like a major thoroughfare. It's really like that. But once you got past the DC and Marvel booth area and it was mostly the comic side, I mean, it was still traffic, but it really seemed like all of a sudden there was like about half as many people just walking the aisles.
What I noticed is I had a couple of times towards the low number, that Hall A section where the posters and the stuff you were talking about, Ralph, you know, where I was trying to get through an aisle or two there, and it wasn't so much that there were a lot of people all over the place, but just in the aisle I was trying to get down, they were suddenly, you know, it was full and nobody was moving. So there wasn't that flow of traffic I could get in. And I was trying to keep up with somebody who was doing much better darting through the crowds than I was. And again, I'm not as small as I used to be either. You know, back 10, 15, 20 years ago, I had no problem navigating the crowds. Of course, they were, again, a lot thinner back then. But I think they're getting close to where they may need to start doing one-way aisles in this convention, just because there's so many people, and it just seemed like every time I was walking through the aisle, the people in front of me either were going slow or wanted to be behind me. The people behind me were going too fast, trying to get past me. The people to the left of me wanted to get to the right of me. The people to the right of me wanted to get to the left of me. I was convinced if you had just upended the convention, turned it 180 degrees, and plopped it back down, everyone would have been able to get where they wanted to go, no problem. I mean, it can be challenging to get across that floor these days.
What's also the hard side of things is if you go to certain areas, like around Artist Alley area, probably like, you know, aisle D or C, where it's pretty small and it's kind of like, you know, the artist, you know, booths and stuff like that. But then they might have some big name person show up, or even at one time they had the cast from the guild show up. And normally those aisles are perfectly fine to walk down. But once something like,
yeah,
big, when people like the guild show up, then that aisle just becomes a wall and a sea of people that you just can't get around anymore. And it's all about just really just looking forward and judging where you're going to walk next. It's really, you got to plan it out.
Last year, I made the mistake of being in the vicinity of the Warner Brother booth around the time the cast of The Big Bang Theory showed up. And it just about crushed me.
Well, I'm surprised you made that alive.
Yeah.
To counterpoint what some of you guys are saying, I feel like the show, it felt less crowded than it had last year and maybe the year before. And it definitely felt that way to me on preview night. And I think that was probably a function of not having all the four-day passes come with the preview night as well. But even then on Thursday, Friday, portions of Saturday, I felt like it wasn't as packed and as much as just like a brick of people to get through the convention. Did any of you guys feel that way at all? Or, you know,
I would agree.
I'm just misremembering.
It was crowded, but you're right. I think in past years there have been a couple of nights. I think last year it was preview night, the year before it was Saturday, or, you know, there were a couple of times in previous years where it was just, like you said, wall-to-wall people. It was hard to get anywhere unless you were literally stuck in that flow going in the direction you wanted. This year it was crowded, but there was still kind of those little gaps you could kind of dart through and stuff. I mean, Gabe, what do you think on that?
I mean, there was times where it was easy to walk through, but a lot of times the way I got around crowds was just darting through someone's booth was my way of getting around people.
How about you, Ralph?
Well, I think Saturdays were always been the crazy day, and then it seemed like a couple of years ago it stopped being quite as crazy because I think a lot of people said, you know, I'm just going to avoid the dealer's room on Saturday. And that kind of lightened things up a little bit, whereas Friday and Thursday were the heavy days. It's still heavy, but I think maybe it seems maybe just a little less than it had in previous years because I think so many people are going to other panels, even other hotels with panels, and waiting in other lines. There's a lot of people being pulled off the dealer's room to go a lot of panels and a lot of waiting in line in other areas.
Well, what do you think, Bob?
I agree. I mean, I think that they've done a lot of things where there's so many events happening, you know, elsewhere, that it does calm down the general dealer's room frenzy. Although, I mean, I still think that the media side has a little more crowding than the, a lot more crowded, let's just say, than the comic book side. You know, and you know, it wasn't like that bad a lot of nights, but I mean, there were times when I'd go there, especially, I don't know, like right around when they first opened, because just a big crush of people come in, maybe about 30 minutes after they open. You know, there's not as many panels going yet, and you just got a lot of people just everywhere. You know, they've been doing a lot of stuff to reduce the crowding.
Yeah, they do a good job managing the crowd, and it's a tough job for them to do.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Do you notice a difference on Sunday with that part of the con that usually isn't as crowded, where suddenly that gets more crowded because everyone has waited till Sunday to shop for those great deals? So not necessarily finding the great deals on Sunday anymore, but I think I noticed that end being a lot more crowded because people suddenly shift from doing the panels to let's get some shopping in before the con closes.
My strategy this year for Sunday was to go to a couple of booths to see if they had some of the lower price stuff early in the morning. I did not see at that point a lot of cut rate prices and stuff. And then at a little after noonish, 1 o'clockish, I guess, 1 o'clockish, maybe two, I headed off site to the Panelfly pop-up store they had a couple of blocks away and stuff, just because I was at that point kind of burnt out on the crowds and stuff in general. So I wasn't really there on the hall floor. By that point, I'd felt I'd pretty much done what I needed to do, though, Sunday afternoon. How about you, Bob? What did you do?
Well, I actually met Sean and Trev and Scott, who's not on the call here, but we had like a lunch/breakfast somewhere a couple of blocks from the convention center. And, you know, that was, what, around 12:30 or so, Sean?
Was I there for breakfast that day?
Were you there for breakfast? Maybe it wasn't you.
I think I may have missed.
You might have missed it. It was one. Trev was there. Scott was there. Oh, maybe it wasn't you. It was somebody else. Anyway, we had this breakfast kind of thing. So I actually left the convention center, got back around 1:30 or so, went to a panel. Then I went down to the show floor probably 2:30-ish. And it wasn't that crowded, and I made a couple of my purchases at that point. You know, I had scoped out some things on Thursday, a couple of comics that I wanted to get, and, you know, that they were charging full guide price at the time. And I didn't even look, you know, for a lot of that stuff. I noticed that a lot of the dealers, they didn't have the, you know, kind of 50% off and other kind of sales at all on, you know, well, I don't expect it on like preview night or Thursday or something. I didn't see them on Friday. I started seeing them on Saturday. So I made some little purchases on Saturday, but the big stuff, I didn't buy it until Sunday afternoon. And it wasn't even Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. Because when I looked very first thing in the morning on Sunday, there wasn't a lot of sales stuff either.
I'd been hearing some stuff from a couple of people that they hadn't been getting much business on preview night, and the rest of the week was a little slow and stuff. So I think a lot of the exhibitors may have been trying to hold off doing those, you know, heavy discounting and stuff until the last couple hours of the con, just to see what they could sell at the full price and stuff, which, I mean, makes sense. How about you, Sean? What was your experience on Sunday?
Well, Sunday morning, I got there right when it opened because that's just kind of what I do. I like to be there right when the convention opens. I like to get there a little early and just kind of get in before everyone. And I was picking up my DC Wayne Casino poker chips every morning. That was my first stop. But then after that,
just really quick, when did you have to get in to get those? Because we've been like going over, and we would like come in about maybe 10 minutes after the show floor opened because we didn't want to stand in a big line. And we'd go right over to the DC booth, and they had already capped the line, and there were, you know, like 1,000 people in it or something.
Oh, wow. Well, typically what I was doing was I was getting to the convention at about 8:30 in the morning, and I would just get in the lines of people waiting to get into the convention floor. And one thing that was nice is I think the earliest that they started leaving people in, I think the official hours are like 9:30 is when it opens.
Yeah.
I think the earliest they started letting people in was it like 8:55.
I was on the floor one morning by at least 9:10 or something like that. So they let people in early.
Okay, so yeah. That was my difficulty. It was like I wasn't even, well, it's not even a problem, really. It's like, you know, we wouldn't even come over until about 9:30, 9:35 from the hotel. And, you know, I didn't feel like standing in lines really this year. You know,
well, I
would just walk right in.
I do think opening a hall early is a potential problem, not for those of us attending, but for those who are exhibiting and have the booths. Because I did walk by a couple of booths in the morning where, I mean, the people just weren't there yet because they probably didn't realize the hall had opened. But, I mean, they're making the best of the situation as it is. You got that many people, you may as well let them in if you can.
A lot of the dealers, they were telling me when I was talking to them, is they're required to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning to get in early, get their booth set up, and be ready for people to come in, you know, 8:30, 8:45, 9 o'clock. These people are already there an hour and a half ahead of time, yeah.
Wow, that's got to suck for them.
Oh, yeah, totally, especially when they're there all day, like, wheeling and dealing and, you know, setting up boxes and doing all that stuff. Those people on Sunday just look fairly miserable, that's for sure.
It's a long show for them, too.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're coming out of state or something. Yeah, those dealers really got it out for them.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed this on Sunday. The last hour, I noticed a lot of the comic guys were closing up their booth early, which I never see at Comic-Con. I've seen it at other cons.
I've seen it in
past years. And usually that tells me that they didn't have a good show. Yeah, but usually that tells me they didn't have a good con. They're anxious to get out of there. And then I was talking with Scott Bradley and Trev at dinner Sunday night, and Scott thought that means the opposite. He had heard that they were actually having good shows.
I think what it really means is they've got a flight to take.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed at the Panelfly pop-up store is, I was there for a while, but they were closing it up literally around me and finally, you know, shooed me and one or two other people out the door so they could lock up and get their flight home. So I think a lot of people come early afternoon on Sunday. It makes sense for them to close up shop at the convention center or wherever, hop on a plane to where they're able to get back to either their day job in comics or elsewhere on Monday morning. I mean, I noticed last year, a couple hours before the hall closed, the Elephant Men booth had just, you know, vanished. At first, I thought I'd simply misplaced it by an aisle or two, but then I realized, no, it really was gone.
Well, I think that another thing there, and if it's similar to other shows, getting out of that out of any convention center at the end of a con is somewhat challenging because there are rules with like the Teamsters Union and stuff that like you can't load your own vehicle. You have to have like Teamsters doing it. And if you don't, like with all those thousands probably of vendors, I think some of them are just like trying to get in front of the line. Because I mean, if you're, you know, person number 700 in line to get out of there, you might not be out of the convention center until midnight or later.
Well, Chuck Rosansky was saying that they had the Mile High booth packed up at 8:30, and it took another hour and a half or two, and going to the manager of the loading dock or whatever, to actually get somebody over there to get their stuff onto their truck and get out of there. But they were there until about midnight or whatever, even though they were ready to go hours earlier. And wow. It's just a matter of, again, you've got an exhibit hall the size of 10 football fields where you've got some booths that really it's just pick up your box of stuff and walk out the door. Others where they've got to do some major deconstruction and major work to put the booth, you know, into pieces and box it up and get it out. And then all of those boxes, all of that trash, all of that stuff has to get out of there. In past years, and this was, you know, more like the 2000-2001 era, I was able to hang loose up in the mezzanine area while they were doing that, and they've got those windows up to where at that point you could see the entire hall floor because it was only like A, B, and C. You didn't have halls D, E, F, and G. But just watching that whole deconstruction thing was really, I mean, it was fascinating because you've got some people, they're burnt out, they want to get out of Dodge as quickly as they can. You've got other people, it's like, well, you know, it takes a while to take apart the part of the jumbo jet that the Pan Am people had for the ABC booth or take down the DC booth and all that stuff. It's a major construction and deconstruction effort.
Yeah, these booths are really getting way, you know, more and more extreme than they used to be.
The one that got me this year, one was that Pan Am thing. They had a mock-up of a part of a jet and themed that. That was just brilliant. But the one that really just took me aback, and I blame Freddie Williams for this, not because he was responsible, but because he was who was on the bank of TV screens I saw as I was walking up to Artist Alley for the first time. And it was showing off, oh, Freddie Williams and his art, and I'm thinking, damn, that takes guts to have that kind of a display for your table in Artist Alley above all these other guys. And then, of course, it flipped to some other artist, and I'm like, oh, okay, not so bad. But, I mean, you could see that from aisles away coming down that one hallway or aisleway or whatever. And I thought that was a really good thing to give added visibility to Artist Alley. Of course, then once you get too close to it, you just are engulfed in the arcade and movie section of the hall, and it's just kind of noisy and chaotic, but in a good way, you know? Oh, yeah. It is impressive just how in-depth some of the booths are.
Yeah, I remember back when I first started going, the Sci-Fi Channel used to be like the biggest, like craziest looking booth that they had every year. And now they're not on the floor there anymore. Yeah, so I don't see them anymore. But like, Marvel's booth is getting ridiculous, where it's really kind of hard to even do anything around there. Who is it? The WB booth is two stories high because the upper decker is where they keep all their big time celebrities and stuff like that for interviews up there with G4 and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, One of the things I noticed between the Marvel and DC booth is DC always has a big one, but it's always one that you can walk into, see the stuff. This year they had a stage where they could do interviews with some of their creators, and I thought that was a good move. And a lot of, you know, good visibility there, good traffic, and very inviting of come in and hang with us. Whereas the Marvel booth, the last year or two, this year it looked like it was something out of a Star Trek set, although it was really for the Avengers. Last year it was Odin's Throne. But it was a big set piece that you walked around, and you couldn't really get into the Marvel booth, and it was more for their movies than their comics, whereas DC had a lot for their movies, but also was still about their comics.
I was going to just mention the exact same thing that you just brought up, was the difference between the Marvel booth and the DC booth. And I personally felt a lot more invited in, so to speak, at the DC booth, because you can walk through it, they have tons of great, you know, gigantic posters. It's just as tall and as big of an area as the Marvel booth was. But they had different tables set up where they'd have different creators throughout the day or different presentations going on. Or you could go pick up swag, like where I was going every morning for the poker chips. And they had the displays of all their toys and stuff, and then the like video games that were coming out. And then the Marvel booth, there was actually no way to actually walk in it. So you were forced to walk around it. And so it seemed like a lot more – the Marvel booth felt like, hey, look at how cool we are, versus the DC booth, which felt like, hey, come hang out with us.
Yeah, I think DC makes a lot better use of their square footage than Marvel does by a long shot.
That's an interesting point. Like you guys were saying, the DC booth – I'm the same as Sean. I went there every day to get the poker chip. And they really had it planned out and lined up perfectly fine for you to get in line if you got there early enough for, you know, the swag for the poker chip and the free comics. And then on the other side, they would have another line for the vertical stuff. And then on the upper corner, they would have another line for the kids stuff. So you could walk through and get all kinds of kids swag, kids comics and stuff like that for everybody. If you wanted the vertical stuff, you could go there and get your free issues of American Vampire or what have you. But Marvel, their swag table was just one table in the middle of a sea of people for you to get a free poster or, you know, some kind of just handout flyer, where DC was actually giving you full-on retail comics for free.
That was a good thing, I thought. I mean, I didn't have to get them because I, like, had them. So, again, I didn't really spend a lot of time standing in lines. But I did notice that the Marvel, they just had that little Marvel mixtape comic kind of laying there forlornly that, you know, by probably Friday everybody had one, you know. And it's like DC every day they would have piles and piles of just all different kinds of full comic books to give away to people.
DC does a really good job running their booth. It's always very organized. If you have questions, you can always identify who's one of their guys working the booth, because every day they have their whatever shirt it is for them, you know, and they change every day and stuff. They've got the headsets, and they can, if they don't have the answer, they can get the answer. I've been very impressed with just how, you know, kind of hyper-organized that booth is, how smoothly it runs, and again, how inviting it is. I really think DC for many, many years has had one of the best booths at the con bar none. They promote their stuff. They do it well. This year, I think they did a good job, again, cross-promoting the comics, the toys, the video games, the television, the movies, the whole nine yards. And I don't think they get enough credit for that. I think they do, again, a really good job.
Yeah. Marvel's booth has always been, since I've been going for the last 9 years, they always kind of piggybacked on somebody else. It used to be like Acclaim or whatever video game company they had at the time doing games for them. And now, just like Bob said, last year was Thor, this year was the Avengers. Their entire booth is more or less like a photo op for people. Yeah. You wait in line to get up on stage and take a picture in front of Odin's throne or in front of the big Avengers symbol and stuff like that. Where DC is, you go in there and it's all Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, JLA, all that good stuff. They are very comic book oriented at that booth.
But that said, the Marvel booth always seems more crowded than the DC booth.
Well, because it's got less square footage. It's a slightly smaller booth, but two, people can't get into the booth. They're all around it, so it feels more crowded. Whereas you could have taken the same amount of people swarming around that booth and fit all of them well inside the DC booth with room left over.
It just isn't organized at the Marvel booth. It's all just people pushing up against each other. Where DC, they have three or four different lines at each corner doing whatever you want. And if you want to, you could cut the line and get in the middle and you could play the video game or get your picture taken, in front of the JLA screen they had, or look at all the cool toys they had there. So they really had it organized way better than anybody else for a huge booth like that.
And again, much better line management.
Yeah, so. that helps.
I think the Marvel stuff, if they had done, say, the Avengers Mansion instead of some generic, helicarrier conference room Star Trek thingy, I mean, they could have done something that screamed Avengers a bit more than Star Trek for what they did. But, I mean, that's just my opinion.
Well, they said they actually took those from the set of the Avengers movie.
So that may well be.
Screens and maybe the stage.
But imagine if it had looked like, say, the Avengers Mansion, and you had, all the different portraits of the different Avengers and stuff up on the wall, or something like that. Something that was more old-school comic Avengers than new school from a movie nobody's seen yet.
No, I agree. But they do seem to, I agree with what everyone else has been saying. They seem to be really promoting their movies more than comics, and it's not as inviting as the DC booth, so... it would be fantastic if they spent some more money and got really creative and did something that was a little more comic book centric, but it doesn't seem to be the route they're going.
No, and the money's in the movies, so I can see why they're doing what they're doing.
On the other hand, the counterpoint of that, which I try to always think about the other side, and I'm sure everybody on this call is really there for the comics. And that's what draws us there, and that's why we love going to Comic-Con, is first and foremost, we're there for the comics, and we're there for a love of the comics. And the movies and the Hollywood is all kind of secondary. But I think that there are a lot of people that are really becoming excited about these types of genres and these characters because of the movies. And so they're not, I guess, we're not their target audience, but there is a lot of people there who are their target audience.
Let me push back on that just a little bit, because I agree with what you're saying, that they're going for the Marvel, the movie stuff. That's where a lot more people are interested. A lot of people coming to Con are coming for the Hollywood aspect, not the comics, and if we can leverage that into them interested in comics, so much the better. But I guess the question I have is, look at that Odin's Throne, look at that booth they did this year with that Avengers set. Now, both times, it was before the movie came out. Was there anything that a person walking by the booth would say, wow, that's so cool, I can't wait to see that movie, I want to read the comic?
Yep, or, you've got a point there.
I mean...
I'm partially just playing devil's advocate and just kind of trying to kind of see the other side of it.
I appreciate that. And back when the time machine was there, you could actually walk around, get up close to the time machine, get up close to some of the other props they had and stuff like that, because it was a booth that invited you in and you could be immersed in it. Whereas this is one you could walk around.
What would have been very cool is if the Marvel booth was an Avengers headquarters, like how you mentioned, and maybe more of the modern setting, but if you could walk through it and they had sort of like, I don't know, maybe Avengers throughout the years showing how the Avengers have changed from back in the days of Avengers 1 all the way up to the movie that we're all expecting next year. That would have been something that I think I would have enjoyed more, but still the movie people could have enjoyed more as well. So I don't necessarily think that they couldn't have done something better or more interesting, but, you know.
It would be interesting if they had used that kind of space, like you said, for an impromptu mini Avenger museum.
That would be really cool. That would have been very exciting and really fun.
And something that they could do in partnership with Disney, which they're now part of. I mean, you look at, you know, be it a Universal Studios or a Disneyland or some of those theme parks and stuff, where it's like stepping into that movie, you know, universe or whatever, be it Back to the Future, Spider-Man, Harry Potter, or, you know, any of the other Disney stuff or what have you. I mean, they could do, if they wanted to, if they had the money to spend, and with a movie budget, maybe they could do something very immersive. Again, the ABC booth for the Pan Am TV show blew me away. I mean, they had good giveaways. They had it themed up where they had, you know, at one point I had to go ask for tickets for their quote-unquote flights because my sister wanted one for later in the day. And they're like, no, we can't do it. And I was like the third or fourth person in a row to go ask the young lady. So what she did, she picks up the microphone because she's standing behind the desk as if you're at the airport. Attention, passengers, you know, and then goes on to her spiel in character, how to get the tickets, all this kind of a stuff. Thank you for flying, you know, Pan Am or whatever. I mean, it was beautifully themed. It was brilliantly done. And it had nothing to do with comics. But if they could do something like that, for, again, the Avengers movie or something else like that. I mean, it shows what, frankly, and that was, a regular-sized booth or maybe two booths put together. It was not that big, but it shows what could be done with some major creativity and a little bit of a budget and stuff and not much square footage on the hall floor.
Yeah. They need to hire us to do these things for them. That's the answer.
Well, actually, one of the things I think was smart, somebody was commenting about how sci-fi is no longer on the exhibit hall floor. What they did a couple of years ago, and I forget how many it was at least one or two, they got rid of their little spaceship kind of monstrosity thing they had on the hall floor, and instead of getting a booth, they rent out the cafe over at the Hard Rock Hotel, and in past years it was Cafe Diem, and totally themed up for Eureka with, you know, burgers themed against all their different TV shows and stuff. So they essentially had a cafe-sized booth, if you will, and a captive audience, because you'd go in there to go have lunch. I did that one year. I thought it was brilliant.
Well, that's been the trend the last few years, where Comic-Con has gotten so big that it's literally spilled out into other hotels and into the streets, whether it's sanctioned by Comic-Con or not.
A lot of it is just knowing about, you know, all the stuff. And it's like, I know they had like that Trickster bar, and I kept meaning to go over there and I never did. I wanted to get that sketchbook that they were selling, but I mean, it was like, I knew it was across the street from the con, but that's not very specific, you know. Sure. It's like, that could be anywhere, you know.
I had passed it and seen it. I didn't realize what it was at the time, though.
I went in there. It was a old, like, wine kind of restaurant, wine cafe.
Yeah,
that they kind of just, you know, implanted themselves into with a bunch of cool people's like prints and sketchbooks and stuff like that. I went Saturday instead of going to the Eisner Awards, because the Eisner Awards was forever long. Me and some people from my shop, we went to Trickster and had a couple drinks there and walked around. And it was really, really cool. I mean, you could easily tell where it was later at night, because that was the only place 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, that had a crowd outside of it.
You could tell where it was. You may not have been able to tell what it was. And I think really that's the best piece of advice for anyone going, particularly to San Diego Con, but other conventions too. Do as much research as you can. Get as plugged in as you can on Twitter, on the websites, on all that kind of stuff. Because otherwise you're going to literally walk by stuff and kick yourself later for not going in. 2 years running, I walked by this thing that was Flynn's down a couple of blocks off in the gas lamp. Had no idea what it was other than it had a line. It was Flynn's Arcade from Tron.
That's cool.
And it's like, damn it, I should have gone in.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, but I didn't go into the Flynn's Arcade.
Oh, because
I think a lot of it has to do with, I don't know if these many, I mean, they advertise Trickster pretty good. But other stuff like Flynn's Arcade and stuff like that, I've never heard of that before until you mentioned it, John, and that's really cool. I think that's also one more thing. They need to, you know, maybe get this out into the media more, the comic book media, you know, comic book websites and stuff like that, of promoting what's going on outside of the convention center.
There's so much. And you know, what's actually interesting is even without a badge for Comic-Con, there are so many of these things, you know, like you say, since it does overflow into, like, pretty much the entirety of downtown San Diego now. I mean, you don't need to have a convention badge to go eat at the Eureka Cafe or go to the Trickster Bar or go to Flynn's or, you know, any of these kind of things that they have elsewhere in the area, you know. So there's just a lot of stuff to do, and a lot of it, you know, it's like you got to prowl around, you know, Bleeding Cool and Newsarama and Comic Book Resources and the other big sites to kind of figure out what all that stuff is, because I do notice that, you know, the Comic-Con site itself, they do a good job of talking about the stuff that's official Comic-Con stuff kind of at the convention center, at the con hotels, but that other stuff, it's not their, you know, it's not their problem, right?
Yeah.
So you don't find out about that other cool stuff just looking at the Comic-Con website.
Now, so, one thing I want to point out real quick is one thing that everyone should do if they're at con, even regardless of where your hotel is and stuff, go across the street, Harbor Boulevard, into the Gas Lamp area. There's by the Tin Fish or whatever. It's on 5th Street, I think it is. Because right there at that intersection with the trolley tracks and all that stuff, there's typically a bunch of people handing out a ton of freebies. Sometimes it's postcards you can turn in for t-shirts, sometimes it's giveaways, free magazines, all kinds of stuff. In this case, some of the USA shows were giving away sunglasses, all kinds of you know, free stuff. So it's worth doing a loop through there, even if you don't necessarily have any business reason to go into the Gas Lamp, although again, with all the places to eat and all the other stuff spilling out into that area, there's tons to do there. You were going to say, Sean?
Did you guys?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, because we were talking about paying attention to information coming up to find out about all these side events. So I just wanted to ask everybody, well, where actually do you go to find out information? Because I know I have an RSS reader that I have set to a lot of the major comic news sites like Comic Book Resources, Newsarama, the Bleeding Cool blog, the Comic Book Beat, stuff like that. And I get a lot of information there, but I'm wondering if you guys have other tips of places to get interesting information to find out about all these kind of side things that are going on.
The one thing I found that worked incredibly well for some friends of mine, it's this group of three sisters. They tend to divide and conquer the convention. And what will happen is one of them will realize, hey, so-and-so is giving away something free at this booth. They'll text the other two. And if I happen to be hanging out with one of them at the time, that's how I wound up at certain booths at the right time to go get certain free things. It comes down to having that network of people, being in cell phone communication via text messages and stuff like that. And that's a great way to do it. As far as being plugged into all of these other things, man, I wish I could tell you, because I'm not. I could do better at that.
So now you bring up an interesting point there, and this is, you know, it's like, what kind of con experience do you want to have? I mean, we're talking about a variety of things here, and, you know, different people are going to go to con for different things, because it is such a huge event, and no one's going to see everything, and there's so many different things to do. You got to look at it and say, like, what is the stuff that I want to do to get the most enjoyment out of this event? And that's going to be different for different people. You know, like in the past, I used to always, you know, I'd try to get, you know, this exclusive toy, or I would, you know, this free something or another. And I was really into that, and I would stand in the big long lines and stuff. And this year I just kind of said, you know, I don't want to stand in a bunch of lines. And I didn't do that this year. And there's nothing wrong with doing that if you enjoy that kind of stuff. It's just I was kind of cleaning up my my garage and all my comic stuff before con this year. And I just had so many, you know, con exclusive this and that things from previous years that are just like laying around. And I don't do that much with them that I kind of decided, you know, I don't need to add another three boxes of con exclusive stuff to my collection this year. So instead of waiting in all those lines, I mean, it would have been cool to have a Wayne Casino chip. You know, I ended up getting one day. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was like I liked the stuff that I did instead of standing in those lines probably more. So you have to kind of like weigh those priorities. I went to probably I went to at least twice as many panels as I've gone to in I can't remember when. You know, I just went to so many panels this year, and I had such a good time listening to the people talk, and you know, the different, you know, they weren't Hollywood panels, they were comic panels, you know, like talking to, you know, the people from Classic Comics and the publishers and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, kind of throw it around. What kind of, and Ralph, I'll ask you, because I know you love to take the pictures there, right? And that's right. A big thing for you.
I learned in the last 10 years that kind of what I did at Comic-Con was changing, where I realized after that one big year back in 2001 that the con had gotten so big that I couldn't go and take my pictures of the celebrities, which I had done for a number of years. So I kind of shifted to taking more pictures of the cosplayers, and I was always taking pictures of the artists. So I just concentrated on that. So as a photo op, Comic-Con is fantastic as long as you factor out the celebrity aspect. Unless you get a press pass or work that angle, you can do that, but even that's still a hassle. So I've kind of shifted where I break it up into different parts. There's a part of me that loves to do the photography. There's another part of me that really has been getting a lot more out of Comic-Con the last few years because I kind of have a smaller con within the bigger con. We've been getting together for dinners at the Rock Bottom and other places like the Tilted Kilt and having more of an intimate setting within this large convention where you can be lost if you don't know anybody. So by doing that, it's kind of made it a lot more enjoyable. And then the other thing I really target is the artist sketchbooks. So I'll do my research ahead of time, figure out where all the artists are, put it in list of terms of where their tables are, so I can basically hit all these tables, just about all of them, on preview night. Within a 3-hour window, I can get about 15, maybe up to 20 artist sketchbooks I'm looking for. And that's the thing, I don't really have that kind of selection at some of these smaller cons, which maybe the experience is a lot more enjoyable at a smaller con, but you don't have as great of a selection of the artists.
How about you, Gabe? What do you go to the con for?
When I first started going, it was completely all about, you know, going there to get the exclusive comic books or to find good deals on back issues and things like that. And I used to get a lot of sketches when I first went. 2002, 2003, I have sketches in my sketchbook from then from people these days like Roberto Ramos, who charges $150 for a head sketch that I got for free. Eduardo Risso, people like that, that these days you would pay an arm and a leg to get sketches from. And once that became a well-known fact amongst people, it became a lot harder to do that. So my traffic kind of, my time I budgeted went a lot more towards exclusives. You know, I started getting more into the exclusive comic books, issue covers they had there, or even the toys and things like that. And after that got crazy, it became more about the panels. And that's what I've been trying to do a whole lot more these days. I did the exclusives this year. I waited in the 2-hour lines to get the wristband, to wait in another 2-hour line to get that semi-cool toy. And it really kind of just brushed me off after this year. But it really nowadays it's all about, I think I'm stepping more into Silver Age back issues. And I think that's really where I'm gonna start spending most of my time these days for the next con, will be more in the dealer room and things like that. Trying to get more commissions and cool one of a kind things like that. That's really where my fun factor comes into for this convention.
How about you, Sean?
Yeah, what I found is the most enjoyable thing out of a convention for me now is hanging out with everybody. You know, we went out after preview night. We met up at the Tilted Kilt on Thursday. I couldn't make it out to Rock Bottom because I was getting together with a bunch of other guys that I know from a Valiant fan site, and we had a big poker game get together that night. And it just every night I was hanging out with somebody, and going out and just, you know, like on Saturday, we all got together and we had our drink and swap evening. And that was a great chance. I met some people I had never met before, as well as a lot of people that I see at every show now. And it's just a great, great time. And that, to me, is really the best part of the show. But in terms of during the show, I found myself, I'm getting more and more interested in talking to the artists, because art is really kind of my interest, and I like to do my own little amateur illustration and stuff on the side. And so I really like to talk to the artists, like my favorite comic book artists, about, well, like, what's their process like? And, you know, how do they work on stuff? Like, what mediums do they like to do? How much of do they approach this as like a job versus something that's fun to do? You know, do they just work 9 to 5, or do they just kind of flow with it and wait till the creative juices are there? And that's what I find, other than just seeing all my friends at the show, that's what I find I enjoy the most, is talking to all the creative folks and actually be able to just dig into them about, you know, what their actual creative process is and what it's like to do what they do.
For me, the con experience has changed drastically over the years. When I was younger, the con was smaller and had a lot more back issues. I would come out of con with just tons of purchases. I mean, nothing, you know, hideously expensive or whatever. It would be like I'd go through a dealer's thing. Oh, they have Omega Men. I've never heard of that. Let me get them all or whatever, you know, type stuff. And, you know, there were years I would go to a lot of panels. There were years I got sketches done. There were years I did, you know, again, the photos and stuff like that. These days for me, I always try to make a point of walking the entire hall floor, at least as much as my feet will allow, just to see what there is that's unexpected, what new titles I'll discover, and that's getting harder and harder every year as the people on the more indie end of the spectrum are getting, you know, kind of pushed out of the convention because it's getting more and more expensive. I like talking with various creators, various people in the business, just to get their perspective on things. You know, one of the things I did this year was attend the ICV2 conference before the convention, which is kind of sort of, but not quite, like the expo they used to have as part of the convention in years past. And it's more of a business side of things. I found that very interesting. Got a couple of contacts with some people that may pan out with some more information for the number crunching and things like that. But for me, it's a little bit of a shopping trip, but usually I don't have a checklist of I must get this, that, or the other. It's very much I want to touch bases with a lot of people and just see how they're doing, how the industry's treating them, what's up with them, and just kind of a more of a voyage of discovery. Can I find a store I hadn't encountered before that may get me some cool stuff in terms of, you know, I went to the HobbyLink Japan booth that was on the low-end numbers and have since, getting back from con, placed an order with them on stuff. You know, things like that, just what I discover there that's new and interesting. You know, this year I went to a number of panels and stuff, talked with a couple of the people who were on the panel afterwards at length, and found that very enjoyable. It was, for me, this was probably the best convention for Comic-Con I've had in ages. Things just fell together nicely. Everything from the interview I got to do Wednesday morning with John Rood, Executive Vice President of Sales, Marketing, and Business Development, and Bob Wayne, VP of Marketing and stuff for DC Comics, through the ICV2 panel, you know, on through the rest of the con. It just started off well and kept going well for me. Cool. Now, we've got a late addition to the episode here, Trevor. How about you? What do you go to the con for, and how is this con for you?
Yeah, I thought it was a great con. I'm kind of like you, John. I think just in the years I've been, my what I look for in the con and how I approach it has changed. In the beginning, you know, it was much more about the media stuff and the spectacle of it all, and this year for me, it was very kind of intimate con. It's about buying books. It's about meeting artists. It's about hanging out and talking to dealers. Going to the panels that are done by Mark Evanier, which are just awesome. I got to say, I saw some of the best panels this year that I've ever seen at Comic-Con. And then hanging out with friends and having a good time, like Sean said.
Yeah, I mean, I said before you joined, Trev, I went to like 16 panels, I counted them, this year, and that's probably double the number of panels that I've gone to in any previous year. And aside from them just being fascinating, a lot of the ones that I went to, you know, it also really helped my physical condition to just chill out and sit down, you know, at various points during the day instead of really just running around the floor trying to buy stuff continually.
And it certainly helped my wallet.
Well, I don't know if it did for me or not, because, I mean, I only bought a couple of things, but they were big things, right? You know, I got that Daredevil number one that you helped me with the grade on, and then I got a Green Lantern number two. So, you know, those were my two big books. And instead of buying a short box full of dollar books, I got these two, you know, key Silver Age books. And I got, you know, just a couple of pieces of art instead of getting... You know, I used to get lots of sketches from people. You know, I would get sketch covers, and I would get, you know, like 5 to 10 sketches for between probably $40 and $100 a piece. And it's like, well, if I'm going to spend $800 on art, maybe I should buy 2 or 3 nice pages instead of getting a whole bunch of sketches. You know, and like you said, just talking to people.
Yeah.
The big purchase for me, and I mean this physically big, not monetarily big, is I got the Gutters omnibus they had. The Gutters is an online webcomic that's like a full comic book page type spoof or whatever of whatever's going on in the industry. This thing is about like 2 foot square kind of monster. I barely was able to fit it in my suitcase to get it home. I think if they do a second one, they need to make it big enough to where I can't fit it in my car. It was ridiculous how big this damn thing was. it's like an omni. It's like an absolute size, but square instead of rectangular or whatever. It had no need to be square.
That's gigantic.
It was huge.
You pick that up in the artist edition of Walt Simonson's Support the Show, and that's enough to fill your suitcase right there.
Yeah, you know, if I had seen the Rocketeer one, because Bob was showing me that at his place before the con, I might have picked that up because that was some nice looking stuff.
If you went to IDW,
I did not look for that. I make a point of not looking for things like that because they're expensive.
Right.
I mean, I could afford it.
I was going to say, I went to IDW first thing Wednesday morning, Wednesday preview night, because the way I go in, I go through the back way where like the concession stands are upstairs, and I go downstairs. The first booth outside that, when you come down from the stairs, is IDW, and that's where I first saw the Walt Simonson's Thor. And somebody asked them; they still had the Dave Stevenson's Rocketeer. And they still did, and he picked up the Walt Simonsons and the Dave Stevenson. So that was really cool that way.
Yeah, I wonder how many they have left of them, because they didn't make that many. But, I mean, it's, you know, $100, so they don't fly off the shelves. You know, it's like people have to have the $100 to spend. And now they're putting out so many of those artist editions. They announced 3 more at the show. They're doing a Will Eisner, a Wally Wood, and a John Romita's Amazing Spider-Man. Now, I'm definitely getting the Amazing Spider-Man one.
Well, that was the big news for me, hearing Bob talk about the different upcoming volumes that they got coming up, because they are expensive books, but I love those books. So, to me, that was the big news of the con for me.
Yeah, they got IDW does some nice stuff. It's just, you know, they're really going to be stressing some fans' wallets if they're putting out, you know, 4 or 5 of those $100 books a year. You know, that's a lot. Because they put out just Rocketeer last year, and it's a year later, and it's a beautiful book, and they still have some left, you know.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting point about what a huge Newsweek Comic-Con is for the industry, and how some of these publishers are announcing stuff that's really a year out in some cases, and that sometimes when those things come to fruition, it's really brutal on people's wallets. I mean, last year at the DC booth, they had those little mini lanterns for all the different cores and stuff, and I saw them, it's like, hey, that's cool. Now, they also had the full-size ones. I looked at them and said, hey, that's bankruptcy. but
those are like what, like $250 a pop or something?
Maybe $350.
Yeah, versus $35 or something for the little ones.
Exactly. You know, a sixth the size, a tenth the price. I could do that. So I'd ordered all those. Those are just now coming out. They were solicited on a monthly basis. They're coming out weekly. And that's something that, again, they planned a year and ahead. We see that also for the comics and stuff, too. But that's one of those that they need to space out the expected expenditures for the purchasing people, you know, on the our side of the fence, if you will, for those to be, you know, viable long term, lest they drive us all to bankruptcy.
Well, I mean, the person that's really going to get hurt by that is the comic shop that ordered those things. And now, because they're pumping about one a week, you know, people don't have the money to buy them all jammed out all at that one time. So now they're potentially going to be sitting on a shelf at a store, tying up their capital, as opposed to, you know, coming out once a month and getting bought kind of as they come out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a cash flow issue.
Yeah. Not just that, but those were announced like a year ago. That's when Blackest Night was still a really big deal.
Yeah, and now
it's a year later that they're coming out, it's completely just
and they're doing a reboot. You know, it's
they're doing a relaunch. They're not doing a reboot, and I think we're pretty sure that most of these cores are going to survive. But I agree, they didn't strike while the iron was hot.
No, completely. They've done that a lot. DC Direct is pretty good about soliciting stuff way ahead of time when something's popular, like the Return of Bruce Wayne toy figures or even the Brightest Day figures. And now they're coming out 6, 7, 8 months later, and the wow factor and the hotness of it has completely died off. And those really get, you know, stuck around on store shelves, I bet.
I was surprised, though, that I didn't see any trace of these mini lanterns at the DC booth. Since they're just now coming out, it would have been arguably more relevant this year than last.
Well, the week that Comic-Con was is when the Green Lantern one came out, and that's the one that everybody wants.
Yeah, well, it came out just late enough that the people who are at Con didn't have it to sell at Con, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Because they were already at Con when it was coming out wherever their store is back home, you know, unless they're like the local store in San Diego or something.
Right. Well, even the local stores sometimes would get burned on Con. This was back when I was living there, so it was over 10 years ago, back when there was more of the current comics still showing up at on the exhibit hall floor. But again, that's one of those how Con has changed over the years. Now, the new comics you're going to see are not this week's comics, but the variant covers of the last couple of months or whatever.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, you don't really find, unless it's like an indie book, you know, the creator selling their indie books, or, you know, you go to like IDW, Dark Horse, Image, you know, at their booths, they have most of their current stuff. And in fact, Image was doing a really good job of like stuff that's like going to ship in the next couple of weeks. They had the number one issues there at their booth so that the creators could sell and sign the number one issue that's going to come out 2 weeks from now or something. You know, so they had those in hand. Whereas Marvel and DC, they don't sell that kind of stuff. You know, they'll give stuff away maybe, but they don't have that kind of stuff. And none of the comic dealers anymore seem to have the current releases of comics, except, John, as you say, I mean, like, there's zillions of these, you know, $10, $15, $20 variant covers.
I was walking by one booth, and it was on the comic side, obviously. It was an end cap, and they had variant covers for some of the Fantastic Four stuff, some of the Flashpoint stuff up on the wall, and I'm like, wow, I've never seen those covers. I have all those comics, I've read all those issues, but I've never seen those. It's always kind of interesting to kind of go through that experience.
I know there's a lot of retailers that were there who were just trying to get rid of their overstock of variants for like $5, and that was really cool to be able to pick up some variants that way.
Yeah, if you're looking for variant stuff, this is a great show to go for that. Likewise, if you're looking for, I think, some of the Silver and Golden Age stuff, most of the back issues I would be looking for are more of that Bronze Age and kind of in that almost dead zone of old enough that the newer, you know, dollar bins aren't going to have it old enough, but new enough that the older Golden Silver Age, even some of the Bronze stuff, those dealers aren't going to have it either. So that's part of why I don't go from any of the back issues and stuff myself.
Now, I'm not looking for most of these issues anymore, but I didn't notice there being as many of the, you know, dollar bin kind of stuff. I think it's expensive enough to get a table at San Diego that most of the dealers tend to not bring the really cheap stuff taking up space.
Yeah.
They have the stuff that's a little, you know, a little more. I mean, there are places, you know, you can get, especially like on by Saturday afternoon, you know, some of the booths are having 50% off. And I mean, you can get stuff from the, you know, 80s, 70s and 80s for less than what it costs for a new comic today, you know, when you factor in like the 50% off and stuff. But, you know, not a lot of just blowout, you know, here's a, you know, 10 long boxes of 50-cent comics. The more local shows are probably the better places to find that kind of stuff. Comic-Con International is not the 50-cent bin destination that it was 10 years ago. I mean,
it's hard to say, oh, let's go buy a short box of 50-cent books when you spent, you know, so much to get there, right? I mean, if you get there and you're like, okay, awesome, I'm going to buy a short box of 50-cent books. I know I could spend nothing and drive an hour from my house to a con to get my 50-cent books, and instead I'm going to fly to San Diego and pay for a hotel and deal with the hassle.
It used to be back when they were at the Civic Center, you would have the I forget what the two halls were, silver or golden, whatever. There was the one side that was the publishers, the other side that was just this sea of long boxes and stuff. And you could pretty much find damn near anything you were looking for at that point. Because, of course, it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there was a lot less stuff out. But also, there was just that much more in the way of back issues available on the floor. These days, you know, it's unfortunate because I think there are a lot of people looking for those couple of gaps in their collection. And there are a lot of the retailers that are exhibiting at the con that would have those at their store, but wouldn't know to bring them for that person to find them if they would even stumble across their booth on the floor, etc.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've noticed over the years is it pays to kind of get a relationship with a dealer, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, some of the dealers I met at the con, I've made sure to check their sites and stuff because you can ask them to bring you something potentially, like what you're talking about, John. So I go in with a want list of three or four kind of key items that I'm looking for. And I'll go and I'll hit every dealer and look at every single possible purchase out there before I buy one. But for what you're talking about, yeah, I mean, there was definitely one guy, like I was looking for an Avengers 4 in like 3.5 or 4, right? And there was one guy who said, oh yeah, I've got one back at the shop, I didn't bring it, right? And Bob picked up something there from a dealer who was holding it for
him. How do you not bring an Avengers number 4 to that show? That's no sense to me.
Because you're expecting other dealers are going to have it in a better condition.
Yeah, or maybe all you brought were your 6s or something.
I guess, but you know, I can see not bringing Nightwing number 38.
Hey, no, just kidding.
You know, to the show, but you know, bring Avengers.
No wonder I couldn't find a Nightwing 38.
For God's sake, you know.
You have no idea how long I've been looking for Nightwing 38. not really, but absolutely. Like Avengers number 4, especially with the Cap movie coming out right now. Like, yeah, that seems like
it's been in the
no-brainer.
Lower grade because I was looking at some of these guys, and I mean, their books were in too high a grade for me to be interested in because, you know, the higher grade on those key books come with a substantially higher price, and I tend to collect down in that 4.0 to 5 range, although I will go slightly under 4 on some of the really expensive keys, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're buying that Avengers 2, right?
Trek? Right. Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, exactly. Because I couldn't get an Avengers 4, right? So, oh well. Well, at least not one that I was willing to pay for, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would think an Avengers 4 in, you know, 3 or 4 shape would probably be pretty easier to sell than maybe one in like a 7. For a dealer.
Yeah, I don't know. There were a lot of guys with Avengers 4 and 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them. I mean, you know, it's one of those books that was popular and they wanted to sell them off. But those were like...
Right, you know, but I mean, that's the thing. Books. You had a lot of people with that book in the higher grades, but in the higher grades, it's what, like a $1,000 book or something. Whereas, you know, it's a $250 or $300 book, and maybe they don't want to dirty their hands on, you know, that, but, you know, that's a little more affordable, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, also, I mean, I noticed this year more than others, I had a lot harder time trying to find books that came out within the last 2-3 years to fill in runs I had, you know, or gaps I had in runs. I have a big gap in Scout, and I couldn't find any dealer that would have anything from 2-3 years ago. They mainly had current stuff within the last maybe year. Stuff like that is what they were really trying to, like, you know, fork out, you know, to people. I found it easier, and, you know, maybe Trevor and Bob did too, for the Silver Age guys. I was way easier to make a deal with somebody on Silver Age books if I bought, you know, a bulk of them, as yeah. opposed to buying a huge bulk of current stuff. You know, I would buy $100 worth of current stuff and say, hey, can I, you know, maybe swing this down to maybe 80, 90 bucks? And they'd be like, no, you know, that's too much of a discount. But if I bought $180 worth of Silver Age stuff, I could easily bump that down 10, 20 bucks. And they were perfect. They would offer it to me before I would, you know, offer it to the dealer that way on Silver Age books.
What day was that, though?
Friday. Really? The whole day when I went crazy looking for that Iron Man 55, I was able to find way better deals for Silver Age stuff.
Right. I went on
you can
Thursday,
find good deals on silver and bronze stuff if you're willing to spend some money at a dealer, right? It's hard if you're going to go out, walk up and spend 20 bucks to say get a deal, but if you're going to buy 10 or 12 books from a guy, he'll cut you a deal.
Oh yeah, yeah, but that, like I'm saying, it was easier to do that for Silver Age dealers than someone who was current. I'll drop 100 bucks on Silver Age stuff. Fine and walk away with 10, 12 books.
But, you know, but current stuff, you know, there's so many websites you can find that stuff for 50 cents or a dollar a piece. It's just, I would tend to not even want to try to buy the newer stuff. Like I'm talking like 85 and up, or let's say 90 and up, unless it's like some really key book, you know, like some first appearance, a really hard to find book. I wouldn't even try to find those at a con because you can just find them all over the place online cheap because they put out so many of those. And, you know, the Silver Age stuff I like buying in person a little better because there's such a wide variation in what somebody will call a certain grade, you know? Mm-hmm, and exactly. It's nice when you're spending a decent amount on a book to be able to physically look at it. I mean, if you buy it online, you can have them send you scans and things. But, you know, actually being able to look at the book, you know, the Daredevil number one I got, which I would call what, about a 3.5, Trev?
Yeah, I think that's probably
it was
right.
A 3.5. Solid 3.5. That looked better than what I see dealers selling as 4s and 4.5s a lot of times.
Yeah. No, when it comes down to online stuff, I mean, you're better off.
But even at a show, I mean, you can go to somebody and they've got something and they're calling it very good or very good plus, and it just doesn't look that good. You know, it's got like an accumulation of defects.
Right. No, you can really talk them down and, you know, bargain with them or even bundle it with something else. But if you're buying something online, you might as well just do CGC at that point. And that's when you get ridiculous for prices for that kind of stuff. It's worth it, like you said, Bob. I'd rather do it in person at a con if I'm going to get, like, you know, key issues, Silver Age, Bronze Age stuff from the dealer at the con.
But I think Trevor has a really good point of, you know, build up a relationship with some of these dealers and stuff. If you go back to them year after year and stuff like that, they're more likely to give you a better deal, more likely to be looking out for the stuff you've told them, hey, I'm looking to fill these gaps or whatever. You
exactly.
know, build that relationship and leverage that.
Like the dealer that Bob bought his Daredevil from, they, for the first time ever in my history of buying books at cons, I pulled together a lot of silver books and quoted back a price to the dealer that was, I thought, a fair price and less than what was on there. And they actually came back to me with a lower number than I gave them.
That is awesome.
Which was just crazy, right? I mean, they just sold, it was the last day of the con. They had just sold Bob a nice book. They were selling me a nice book. One of our other friends was buying books from them. And we had talked to them probably 2 or 3 times during the show.
Yeah, I mean, I came back a couple of times and it was just like, you know, it's a nice book. I am interested, but, you know, it's a little much. I'll come back on Sunday, you know, kind of thing. And when, you know, they didn't sell it, well, they did sell a book because they had an Avengers 2 that was like a 4 or 5, and that one sold. So, you know, and they had this, the one you got was like a 5.5 or something like that.
Yeah,
they had
a 5.5
grade, or they had a lower yeah. grade one. Anyway, well, I mean, it's the chance you take, right? If you want to wait until Sunday to try to get a deal, sometimes it'll somebody else will pay full price. And it's just like, oh, you know, okay. You know, that's how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
But it comes down to how. Have you ever had a dealer say, I know you gave me a number that was lower than my number, but here, I'll take a number that's lower than that. I mean, that just blew my mind when they did that. Right? That and it like wasn't you, much. They gave me like 5 books, basically, as part of the deal. But it was cool.
Yeah, it sounds like they need to take negotiation classes again.
Well, you know what they did, though? What they did was they made sure that next year Trev's going to buy books from them.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're looking at the long-term relationship
from them again too. I mean, they were decent guys. I mean, they had some reasonable prices. They were willing to deal, not necessarily on Thursday, right? But I don't necessarily expect someone to give me 30% off on a book on a key book on Thursday. You know, well, I ended up getting like about a third off on this book. You know, on the Daredevil that I was looking for, and it was reasonably priced. You know, in the first place.
Was it the only book you bought from him, or did you get like a
I only first? Got that book. I mean, because nice. It was like a not a cheap book, right?
No.
But I think nice some of book. These people who are dealing in the Golden and Silver Age and even some of the earlier Bronze stuff, they realize they've got a smaller group of potential customers and stuff to be dealing with, and that's going to be a longer-term relationship versus the people who are just trying to flip more recent books. You know, there's a much bigger demand for stuff from the last year than the people who are going to pay for, again, an Avengers 2 or an Avengers 4 or whatever for those even looking for it.
Right. I mean, when you're buying books that have price tags on them between, you know, $15 and $50, it's a lot easier to buy a stack of those books than, you know, it's like I'm looking at a book that's got a price tag on it of $390, you know. It's like, well, okay. What can we do here?
Yeah.
Did we discuss, though, like, what was our coolest pickups that we got from Con this year?
Sure, we can go through and do that. Let's start with you.
Well, I kind of mentioned it before, and I mentioned the whole time I was there meeting you guys, I was going crazy looking for an Iron Man 55, which is a first appearance of Thanos. And I finally found one that, I mean, I met Trevor at one place, and the guy wanted $400 for a 9.2, which is, you know, it was fairly reasonable. But more than I was willing to spend, but I found one eventually that for $120 looked just as nice. I would say it's probably like a high 9 also. So that's where I went, $120 on Iron Man 55. That was my big purchase this year.
How about you, Ralph?
My big purchase?
Yeah.
I don't know if I had one this year. In the past, I would normally target something. I was, for a while there, looking at Golden Age Captain America, since that was about the only thing left I had to collect of Cap. But I kind of reasoned myself out of it the last year, where until I get a regular job here, I can't really be spending that kind of money. So I think for me, it was just a lot of little purchases, buying the artist sketchbooks and the more of the experiences, going to see the Captain America movie and seeing Chris Evans down there and doing things like that. So it wasn't so much the high-end purchase thing I was after, but a lot of little smaller experiences and smaller purchases.
Cool. How about you, Trevor?
I think for me, the two big books I got were Flash 123, which is the Flash of Two Worlds, first introduction of the multiverse concept, I think, in DC, and Avengers 2. And then just not a big books for me, but cool was to close out my run of X-Men from Giant Size 1 through 142, so all the Byrne Cockrum stuff. I needed three or four books for that run and got them all at the cons. So that was awesome.
Cool. How about you, Sean?
You know, I'm kind of like Ralph. I didn't really have a lot of big purchases. I had planned on getting a sketch from Terry Dodson in my book this year, but it just didn't pan out this year, and he was just busy and didn't have time to get to it. And I was kind of budgeting a lot of my money for that. But I didn't buy a single back issue at this year's convention. And in past years, I've made some big purchases, and I'm working on a Silver Age Green Lantern run. But I just kind of – I wasn't excited about the idea of going, you know, back issue diving. And what I'd say is, of the stuff that I did get, the thing that I've enjoyed the most is the Dave Stevens sketchbook that IDW put out that collects his he collects past sketchbooks from that he's put out in the past, and that is just a gorgeous book. And
yeah, I got that,
guy,
too.
That
yeah,
guy,
I picked that up too.
He can draw like nobody's business, and it's just it's been a treat just to take my time and look through that book. So I would say it's nothing like exotic really. It's just kind of show up and buy it there. But I've really enjoyed that book.
How about you, Bob? What was your big purchase?
Well, I mean, I got the Daredevil number one, obviously, and Green Lantern number two, and then I got that big splash page from Booster Gold that I've got posted up on the forum. Those are my big three things, and I think I like getting those more than in previous years when I've gotten, 10 times as many smaller things. Just getting a couple of really big key things. So I didn't buy that many other things. I mean, I got some sketchbooks, like these guys said. I got that Dave Stevens sketchbook. I picked up the, little Stan Sakai Usagi Yojimbo sketchbook that I get every year. So that's $10. I got the J. Scott Campbell sketchbook. It's relatively cheap. Just little stuff. But the big things, I just got a few. They were cool.
I, again, don't go really as a shopping expedition or whatever, but I had a couple of one big purchase, one kind of an impulse purchase. The impulse one was the Batman Mimeobot or whatever, Mimobot, which is a USB flash drive in the shape of Batman. They had this over, they had a booth over in the Star Wars Pavilion and then another one over in the computer game section and stuff. And my sister got a Boba Fett one or whatever. But they had them that were 64 gigabytes in size. So it's like, okay, what the heck, I'll splurge for that. And actually, I mean, these things are not only cool looking, they're competitively priced for how much, those USB drives are going for at lower per gig sizes and stuff. So I bought that as kind of a cool toy or whatever. The big purchase I made was I signed up for the collectible insurance service. So I finally have proper insurance coverage on my collection and stuff, and that set me back a few pennies, but it was something I've been meaning to do in many years. And finally, I just first night went over, picked up the paperwork, filled it in over the course of the evenings, went back on, I think it was Saturday or Sunday morning, and asked them a couple of questions of, did I fill this out right? Did I get this right? What about this? And got all that squared away. They quoted me a thing, so got that done. And for you guys with big collections and stuff, Trevor, certainly, I think you should look into that if you haven't already.
Yeah, I've got it.
Yeah, I need to look into it.
I think it's fairly priced and stuff, and if I were to have come back and the house burnt down or something, in theory I would have been fully covered, even having just gotten it and stuff. But beyond that, I picked up a couple of role-playing games, a couple of comics, the 11th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver at one of the BBC booths or whatever. So nothing too major. So why don't we go around the room, if you will. Final thoughts on the convention and kind of close it out with that. We'll start with you, Trevor.
Another great year, another great show, and beautiful San Diego weather and good friends. I mean, doesn't get much better than that, and I'm glad I got a ticket for next year.
Cool. How about you, Ralph?
As much as I whine every year about Comic-Con, and maybe this might be my last year, I always have a great time and seem to be signing up for the next year. It's the Super Bowl of comic conventions. It doesn't mean you might be getting a great game, but it's the spectacle of it. And there's a lot of great choices there. So there are comics at Comic-Con.
Cool. Gabe?
It's a wonderful convention. I love it every year. And people might say that it's become MediaCon or HollywoodCon. And really, I think this is really a convention that it is what you make it out to be. If you want, you can make it a comic book convention and stick within the comic book dealers and artist alley. Or if you're there and you want to make it a Hollywood con, you could turn it that way by waiting in line for Hall H and things like that. So it's really about how this con is really what you make it out to be. And to me, I made it out to be a very fun, exciting time where I got to meet new people like you guys and things like that. So it's really something I'm looking forward to again next year.
How about you, Sean?
I had a blast, and I'm already looking forward to next year.
Bob?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's the con to go to, and it's big enough and has a wide enough array of stuff that it can be the perfect con for anybody that goes to it. You just need to, you know, do a little research on it before you go. It's so big. Have that plan and do the stuff that's going to make you happiest about the con. You know, like we were saying, you know, if you want to go and just see the Hollywood stuff, make it a Hollywood con. If you want it to be a comic con, it's the greatest comic con out there. I mean, there's so much comic stuff to do at it. And you can meet creators. You can do all kinds of things there. And it's just, for any kind of pop culture fan of any type, it is just something to see. The advice I would give people is, we're going to see how they go this year. But, you know, last year was really challenging when they tried to sell the tickets online. Well, they limited the number of tickets they sold at the con this year. You just want to keep watching the Comic-Con website. And, you know, I'll be paying attention, and we'll try to mention it on the comic book page show when they do announce what day that they're going to sell the tickets. But if you want to go, you want to go and try to buy those tickets the day that they become available. And the other thing I might mention is San Diego is such a great destination that someone who's never been before and wants to try going, you don't necessarily have to get a four-day badge. You can get a couple of one-day badges, go to San Diego and make it a vacation, and you can see other things in the city, you know, when they're there, and go a couple of days to the con as well. Because, you know, like we were saying, even the nightlife and stuff, I mean, there's stuff around the con that you don't need a badge for, and you can do that stuff on days that you don't have a badge.
Cool. So. Yeah, this is definitely the be-all, end-all comic book convention. That having been said, if you watch any television show with the slightest bit of a genre influence, odds are somebody from that show, if not their entire cast and crew, may show up at the San Diego Comic-Con. The amount of Hollywood presence there is staggering. I think that's very good, frankly, because, you know, it gets more people into the doors here and exposed to the wonderful world of comics, toys, games, you know, etc. It is stopped being a fringe little event for comic book geeks to a major stop on the Hollywood promotional tour. It is a major venue for entertainment stuff. Like Bob was saying earlier, there's Entertainment Weekly, you know, magazines about this. If somebody were to go and not be able to find a single thing they were interested in at the convention, my response would be they didn't look hard enough. You want to go for just a science fiction book convention, there are science fiction authors there to be found. Maybe not necessarily easily. You're not just going to stumble across stuff. You got to know what you're looking for and go find it. But there is just a ton of great stuff. If you do go to this convention, pace yourself. You know, drink plenty of water. Have comfortable shoes. It is physically a very demanding convention, but it is it's an excellent convention. One well worth going to. It's a ton of fun. I enjoy it every year, and like I said, this was, for me, one of the best years I've had and that I can remember. It started off strong. I went to a couple of panels that were just a load of fun, and just got to see some really cool stuff. So, totally recommend the convention.
I might add, you know, you said something there, John, that really caught my ear, and that is, you know, if somebody wants to go to this show, we're all around. You know, come out to the forum. You know, if you're going for your first time next year and it's June and you want to figure out what you want to do and you want some advice, come out on the forum and ask, or just send us an email, and we would be happy to, you know, help you out, you know, with whatever experience we've got and answer any questions that any listener has about the convention. And, you know, all these other guys who are on the episode, they're all on the forum too. And, you know, we're happy to, you know, help you out on what kind of plan of attack to make it the most fulfilling con for you personally.
And if you have suggestions either from this con or any other convention you've been to on, you know, advice, hey, here's a really good backpack to use as going around con, or be sure to do this or whatever, post that on our forum, because I've been going to this convention for like about 30 years or so straight. And these three sisters I was hanging out with at one point, whom I've known for a good couple of years through Comic-Con, again, they were so organized, I was staggered. I mean, everything from the, you know, oh, you got some posters, here's some rubber bands to go hold the posters with or whatever. It's like, I hadn't even thought to have rubber bands with me. It's like, damn it, what a brilliant idea. I mean, it's the small stuff that any one of those individual things isn't going to make or break your con. But if you go in organized and you have all of these tips and you really go in prepared for the convention you want to have, you can have an excellent one. And I don't think any one person has cornered or perfected the con going experience. So it's a matter of sharing what works for you, warning people about potential pitfalls, and how they can have the best kind of convention they want to have. Because there's really about 8,000 different types of conventions you could have at San Diego in any given year, just based on where you are, what you're looking for, and you know, what your attitude is. So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys, for being on. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you guys on the forum.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what we've discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.